welcome back to the Plant Powered Podcast, everyone. Today I've got a wonderful, exciting interview with Naturally Nina, who I found on Instagram. I've followed her for a little while and she posts really informational little graphics that she puts together and lots of good ideas and covers lots of good nutrition topics. So I'm really excited to have her on board. And was there anything else you wanted to add to introduce yourself as well?
No, well, thank you for having me. I guess I just want to add, yeah, I'm an accredited nutritionist and sports nutritionist, and I'm also a CrossFit coach. So that's kind of where my main passions lies, anything sort of nutrition, health, fitness related, and making sure I'm evidence-based and sort of dispelling all the myths, because there's so much misinformation out there in the space, especially when it comes to health and food and plant-based nutrition. So really kind of giving people that knowledge and confidence that they're making the right choices, and also having a good relationship with food is super important to me.
Yeah, I like the crossover between the plant-based stuff and the CrossFit, because I was going through your Instagram this morning, because not everyone kind of thinks that it will be a hindrance to your performance, but I like that you're providing healthy swaps and showing how to do it in the right way. And how long have you been plant-based for as well, or vegan?
8 years now, so quite a while.
Oh, that's so long. Yeah, time goes fast.
It actually is. It does go fast.
The first thing I wanted to cover was your most recent post. That was, what should people do if they're hungry after they eat, and why could this be happening? Because that's quite an interesting one. I know you got lots of reshares on that post as well.
Yeah, so I think it's such a common misconception or a belief that people have around food, is that, you know, if they've eaten, they shouldn't be hungry again. And they have this idea of, okay, this is how much I should eat, or this is how much is enough. You know, for example, 2 pieces of toast should be fine. Like, I should be fine after that. Or 30 grams of oats, or whatever it is. You know, people have this idea, I've eaten enough, or maybe it's a day where they're not as active and they think, oh, I shouldn't be hungry because I'm not very active today. And just, you know, beliefs we have like that around food. But our hunger, you know, we're not robots, we're not machines, and our hunger isn't something that we can control in that way, and it's also not something we can predict or something that you know we should fear. It is just a way that our body communicates with us its need for a bit of extra food, a bit of extra fuel, a bit of extra energy. And if we're getting hungry, rather than thinking, oh, I shouldn't be hungry, or even like, why am I hungry, it's more, okay, that just means that last meal that I ate probably wasn't quite enough, or maybe it wasn't quite balanced. So maybe I had a meal that just digested really quickly and it just wasn't enough to give me that sustenance and that energy and satiation that I need for the next few hours. And just thinking, okay, well, can I eat something extra because it obviously wasn't quite enough? Or can I have another serving? Or maybe next time I make that meal, can I add something to it or change something around to make that meal a bit more filling and more nourishing? Rather than seeing that as something that you've done wrong, it's something, okay, my body's just trying to show me something.
I think that's a really good way of looking at it. One of the older interviews I did on here, this other girl who does powerlifting as well, she said that she recommends her clients eat exactly the same amount on a rest day, or sometimes even more, to help with the recovery. So I think that's a good way to look at it, because sometimes we'll be less hungry if we're just inside and not actually burning the energy. But sometimes our bodies will need something, even if we're trying to fight off something, like if we're getting sick, our bodies will crave more food because it's just trying to get more nutrients into us, or depending on our cycle, or if we're stressed or haven't slept well, everything always changes. So I always think always tune into how you're feeling, and just feed yourself if you're hungry.
And people still have this attitude towards rest days of, oh, I'm not active, therefore I shouldn't eat much. But rest days are, especially if you're someone who's like regularly active, so not just once or twice a week, but most days of the week, your rest days are your recovery days. And if you're not eating properly on those rest days, then you're going to be hindering both your recovery from your training that you've done the previous couple of days, plus also you're hindering your performance the next couple of days because you haven't fueled up properly. So absolutely super important to still eat really well, and probably the same amount as you would on training days on those rest days.
Another one of your posts that I really like was, how can people with a small appetite still effectively fuel their body? Because I feel like I've kind of suffered from that before, or more if I couldn't be bothered cooking food, but also because plant-based foods are lower in calories, you've got to actually make sure you're eating enough to get the energy to fuel your day. So do you have any tips around that for someone who's not as hungry?
Yes, that's such a common one. Like you said, in the plant-based space, also just people who are quite active and might have energy needs that kind of go beyond what their appetite naturally tells them to eat. Plus, we've also got other situations like, you know, stress or sickness or certain medications or whatever reasons that we might have a low appetite. And some of the ways that are really helpful to help you still get enough food when your appetite is low is, number one, eat more frequently. So trying to have those snacks and eat regularly every sort of 2 to 3 hours rather than just, you know, waiting to get hungry and only eating then. So almost like just saying, okay, every 2 to 3 hours, I'm going to have something, and trying to have more small meals frequently rather than really big meals that are going to make you feel very full for a very long time. Then the other thing is looking at the energy density of the foods that you're choosing. And if your appetite's low, just trying to choose more energy dense foods. So rather than, you know, lots of beans and lots of vegetables and lots of salads, which are obviously very energy dilute and fill up your stomach without giving you much in terms of calories, trying to choose things which are a bit more condensed. So that could be things like, you know, going for more of the oats and granola, going for more rice, pasta, nut butters, adding oil, sauces, dressings, protein balls and like bliss balls and bars and things like that can be really helpful. Drinking your calories can also be really, really handy. You know, it's so much easier to drink rather than eat something when your appetite's low. So you could do a smoothie or like a flavored milk, like an up and go type of thing, fruit juice, even like after a workout, sometimes that kills our appetite and you're just not hungry. So like a smoothie or a protein shake is really handy in those situations when you know you still need to have that fuel, but you just can't stomach food. So going for a liquid option there can be a really good thing.
Yeah. Another thing to add that's helped me as well is just being prepared with meals, because when I was going through really emotional stuff and I just didn't even have brain capacity to think about what to make, and I'll just look in the cupboard and I'm like, oh, I just can't be bothered eating. So if you've got something there, just cook in bulk, cook for a family if you live by yourself, and then just eat that over the next few days, or just have really easy go-to snacks. And sometimes for breakfast, if I'm lazy, I'll just literally have satay tofu done in the air fryer. Or today I had those vegan chicken like fillet things, and I just I put it in the toaster because I couldn't be bothered getting a pan. So just basic stuff that's still providing you with a source of protein. That's like ultimate lazy girl. But I was like, I can't be bothered cooking because I was trying to focus and be really productive today. Yeah, so I just did that. And then, just always making sure you've got really easy things, even grabbing like a protein bar and piece of fruit is going to sustain you for the next couple hours. So it can be really easy. Or just have your list of go-to things that don't require much effort or brain power or time to put together. I also wanted to ask you about how can vegans ensure they're getting enough calcium intake? Because everyone always thinks that they need to drink milk for healthy bones, and they don't think that plant-based alternatives would be an adequate source. They don't know where else it would come from apart from cow's milk. So how can vegans ensure that they're getting enough calcium?
Cool, that's a really good one. So one sort of easy, so our calcium needs are around the sort of 1,000 milligrams of calcium per day. So if we try to aim for a minimum of 1 cup of fortified plant-based milk per day, that's around 300 milligrams of calcium. So that's kind of already a third of your daily needs ticked off just by having that cup of milk. And that's something so easy to include in your diet, because guaranteed everyone's going to be having, you know, maybe some oats or some cereal or a smoothie or something like that where they can incorporate that milk per day. So making sure that you're choosing a calcium fortified milk and aiming to have at least a cup a day, that's a really great kind of booster that you can already start off with. Then including other calcium rich plant-based foods, a few serves of those per day as well, is a really great way just to top that third that you've already got off and reach your recommended intake. So that could be things like tofu, legumes like white beans, chickpeas have a little bit of calcium. Your whole grains will contribute. Unhulled tahini is one of my favorites. That's, you know, per tablespoon that has about sort of, I think, around 100 milligrams of calcium. So that's a really great one. Almonds and other nuts and seeds, chia seeds, oats, and then your leafy green vegetables as well. And these days also other fortified products. So some countries have like the Alpro range of soy yogurts. They have a good amount of calcium in them if you have access to that. Some plant-based meat alternatives these days are also fortifying calcium, which is fantastic to see. So those are also other ways that you can just boost up. Also, there is in some countries fortified orange and other fruit juices. So if you're a juice drinker, trying to choose ones which are fortified. I know people sometimes think, oh, fortified foods, that's not natural. I should just get it from natural sources, but it's actually really great. Fortified foods has changed public health on a such a big level. You know, people just struggle to meet their nutritional requirements without, you know, soils are more depleted. We don't, you know, eat enough of those foods every single day. It makes it really hard without consuming fortified foods, not just for plant-based people. Like if we look at iodine and folate being fortified in just like the general population for everybody, like that's something really important. And it's not something that we should think, oh, it's bad just because it's added to the food.
I find it helpful, especially with the sun-fed chicken. They fortify it with iron and B12. So I always think it's a bonus if you can just add a little bit more in your day, then it's going to help you feel better. The other thing I was going to ask, so is unhulled tahini, is that higher in calcium than hulled tahini?
Yes, it is. It is quite a bit higher. So it does have a little bit more of a bitter taste than the hulled one, which I think is like just an acquired thing. If you're used to the hulled, it might take a little bit of time to get used to the unhulled. But if you're like adding other things to it, so for example, when I use tahini, it's usually like I'll make a dressing or a sauce with it, and I might add, you know, some Dijon mustard and some garlic powder and onion powder and lemon. You could even add like a little bit of maple syrup if you're making a dressing, just to make it, you know, it tastes nicer if you don't like that taste. But if you know, unless you find it absolutely horrible, definitely go for the unhulled one because it's much higher in calcium.
Lots of people always get that wrong as well, because I know so many people who they're trying to go on a diet and be healthy and cut down and lose weight, and they just cut out all salad dressing because they think it's bad. But you can make really nice dressings with the tahini, rice milk syrup, lemon juice, and a little bit of olive oil. It's so creamy and sweet, and then zesty from the lemon. So there's so many different things, or even a bit of balsamic glaze I just put on my salads as well. So you can add really nice stuff to your salads, and I always add nuts and seeds to my food as well. It just adds crunch and flavor, and it's pretty for photos, but it's really good for you as well with the healthy fats.
Definitely. And it definitely like makes it much easier to eat all of those green veggies and things like that when you're putting something on it that makes it taste really good. So I think that's a great thing to do. So you're adding extra taste and extra nutrients as well.
Yeah. I also wanted to ask you, how does pre-training nutrition differ from regular daily nutrition?
Cool. So it's a great question. So nutrition around training, when it comes to nutrition in general, we always have to think about what is like the purpose of that meal or the purpose of that snack and the purpose of the food that we're choosing. So, you know, throughout the day, we're eating to support our health mostly, and, you know, meet our nutritional requirements, have sustained energy throughout the day. These are the kind of things that we're thinking of. When it comes to training nutrition, the purpose of it is to fuel our training and to support our performance. So our food choices might look a little bit different to that every day, because we're not, you know, trying to eat to stay full for as long as possible or to meet our nutritional requirements. It is specifically to fuel that training session. So for training, we want to be picking foods which our body can absorb and use for energy quickly, so we have that fuel available to perform well, and also foods that aren't going to cause digestive discomfort. So if you imagine if you were going to eat like a big bowl of beans and brown rice and vegetables before you go and do a HIIT workout, you can imagine you probably wouldn't feel very great. Like it would be heavy in your stomach, you might feel a bit nauseous. So that's why, even like if we think about if we're going for a run, like if you eat foods that are too high in fiber or too high in fat before a run, you'll probably get runner's gut. So you'll probably have to stop and go to the bathroom, get stomach cramps, that type of thing. So even though those foods might be healthy foods for pre-training, like 30, 60 minutes before we train, those foods are actually not a great choice. Even though they're healthy, they're just not ideal for that context. So around training, before, during training, we want to look for more refined, simple carbohydrates. So that could be things like toast with some jam, maybe a little bit of nut butter. It could be something like a cereal bar, like a Clif bar. It could be some crumpets with honey or jam. It could be like banana. It could be dates. It could be even lollies, sports drink, that type of stuff. Some people think, oh, you know, that's bad, it's too sugary. If your purpose is to best fuel your body for performance and have that digested really quickly, you know, you're in a CrossFit competition or you're running or something like that, like those are good choices because that's going to fuel your body to do what you're asking it to do. And outside of training is more when you go more vegetables, more whole grains, more complex carbs, more fiber, more fats to tick those nutritional boxes, keep you satiated, keep you full. If you had something, you know, like a normal breakfast might be like, okay, whole grain toast with peanut butter and banana and cinnamon and, you know, a glass of soy milk, something like that, or some oats with some fruit, with some chia seeds, with some soy yogurt, you know, that type of thing. Something that's going to be really filling versus a pre-training breakfast might be more like, okay, I'm going to go for a white toast, put some jam, a little bit of nut butter maybe, or I'm going to go for just some cereal with soy milk, like a low fiber cereal, versus those choices you probably wouldn't choose if you weren't training because they're not going to keep you full that long.
Yeah, that's a really good way to look at it because I think a lot of people still to this day look at their plate and they're thinking about how can they reduce it or like feeling guilty for the food. But if you're looking at it as a way, like seriously as a way to fuel your body, then it completely changes your whole perception of your meal kind of thing, instead of just eating to be skinnier or smaller or lose more weight. It's more of a practical thing that's going to fuel you and give you energy. So I think all of those are really good tips. Yeah. Why is promoting always having a flat stomach problematic?
That is something that I can talk about for hours because like the amount of people online that we see, you know, like just the comparison that goes on. For example, like the What I Eat in a Day videos where someone starts showing their flat stomach at the start of that video. Yes, it's clickbait. Yes, it gets attention. But it gives this ideal that that's what we should aspire to look like. Like that's what it looks like to be healthy and happy and successful and whatever, when that's really just not the case. Like first of all, when we eat food, that food has to go somewhere. So if you imagine you wake up at the start of the morning, you might have a relatively flat stomach. Okay, sure. But throughout the day we eat, we drink, that food, that water doesn't just disappear into thin air. It goes into our stomach. Our stomach is almost like a balloon. When we eat, that food goes into our stomach and then it takes, you know, a few hours to digest. But because we're eating regularly throughout the day, we're drinking, as we progress throughout the day, especially, you know, if you eat a plant-based diet or a whole foods-based diet that's higher in fiber, a bit bulkier, your stomach isn't going to be completely flat at the end of the day. And if it is, there's really high chances you're probably quite underfueled and you're not eating enough because otherwise your stomach would have some food in it. It would be like that is a sign of a well-nourished and healthy body. And the other thing is like we naturally hold some fat around our stomach areas, especially as women, because that's all where all our important organs are, you know, and it's just healthy to have a little bit of body fat there. It's not, you know, for most people to have a completely flat stomach or get, you know, that lean, it requires sacrificing, especially mental health, but even possibly physical health. And that's not healthy. You know, if you have to severely restrict yourself, become very rigid with food in order to achieve this, that's not healthy at all. So we really have to weigh up these things and remember that health isn't one look. Sure, some people might be healthy and have a flat stomach, but lots of people won't have a flat stomach and they can still be just as healthy or even healthier.
Yeah, I think that's really good to just feel more relaxed around it. Because I saw another girl post online that heaps of clients go to her and they're like, oh my God, my stomach's bigger at the end of the day, like compared to the morning, and they're wanting tips on how to stop it and stuff. And she's like, well, have you eaten? Because it's just a normal part of your day kind of thing. So people shouldn't be ashamed of it. And I've said this in one of my other previous podcasts as well, but I saw a video pop up on TikTok of all the bodies that have been worshipped across history, like all the olden day kind of canvases of women and stuff. And they just carry so much more body weight than what we're aspiring to be. So like, even if you do have more body weight, it's not even a bad thing. How can someone know if they are underfueled or if they are eating enough?
Right. So some really great ways to tell if you're eating enough is just to look at the signs that your body's giving you that you might not be eating enough. A lot of people think, oh, if I'm not losing weight, I must be eating enough. But weight is just such a tiny part of the picture. And often, you know, it doesn't really tell us much. Other things we can look out for is, a big one is energy levels. So if you're feeling tired and fatigued all the time, that could be a sign of underfueling. If you're not progressing in your workouts and your training like you'd expect, like you're not getting stronger, you're not seeing that progress like you'd expect when with consistent training, you're staying sore for ages and not recovering well from your training, you're getting sick and injured a lot, that can be a big one. Thinking about food all the time, that's a really good sign that you're not eating enough. If you're constantly thinking about food, you're probably hungry or underfueling. Another one is digestive issues are really common when we're underfueling, and that's because our body starts to try and conserve energy. So it slows down different body systems, one of which is digestion. And if we think about it, if digestion's suddenly really slow, things like bloating, gas, even feeling full for prolonged periods of time, that can be really common. For women, losing your period or getting irregular cycles is a good, a telltale sign of underfueling. And then just low mood, irritability, low motivation, those are also signs to look out for.
I think the biggest one I experience is probably low energy and brain fog or difficulty concentrating. Like if I just haven't been eating enough or something, I'll be trying to do something and then can't focus and I'm like, oh my God. And then you just feel really lethargic and then I'll just go and eat something and I'm like, oh, okay, ready to carry on the afternoon. And it's just a good reminder just to keep making sure you eat regularly during the day. Yeah. But I went through a lot of stuff early in the year where I was just really emotional and lost all my self-worth. And I actually just barely ate for months, basically. I'll just eat peanut butter sandwiches and coffee. And I just didn't value myself because of all the stuff I was going through. And then it actually, even for something like that, if someone has an eating disorder or something, because they maybe think they don't deserve food, or maybe they're trying to lose weight, so they're not eating enough. When that happens, for me, it took probably months to recuperate, especially being plant-based, because if you're not meeting your daily intake for so long, then it actually takes a long time, even once you're mentally feeling better, just to get your energy back and get the life back into you. And you'll be trying to recuperate it for a while through eating more veggies and stuff and supplementation as well. So I think always just treasuring yourself and just making sure you're trying to meet your daily requirements all the time and just plan out all your meals as well. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
How can someone feel more confident in their body without changing it?
This is a really tricky one. I think one of the really best places to start is to start shifting your mindset away from just what your body looks like and more to like what your body can do and what your body does for you every single day and all of the things that, you know, you do it like, you know, for example, it could be in training. It could be just things like, you know, going outside for a walk in the fresh air. It could just be like, you know, keeping you alive, like looking at all of these things that your body does for you every single day, literally carrying us throughout our lives and allowing us to do everything that we love doing and everything that we do. If you exercise, looking at your performance rather than, you know, the calories burnt or weight. So focusing on, you know, getting stronger and being able to progress in your training, that's a really great way to sort of shift to more being more appreciative of your body and just kind of shifting your mindset as well to giving yourself that self-care and self-respect to look after and take care of your body, even if you feel like you don't really like the way you look or you're not perfect. So having that more neutral approach and thinking, okay, look, there's things I don't like about my body, but I can still take care of my body and value it despite those things.
I think if people can also incorporate some self-care or connective kind of rituals. So all the time I put on like body oils instead of moisturizer if it's at nighttime and it's got all these nice essential oils in it, and rub it into my skin, and it's kind of just a way, even if it's a few seconds or half a minute or something, it's just a way to connect with your body. Or even having a bath and then just feeling how soft your skin is and little things like that to just connect with yourself more and just appreciate it. And the biggest tip I always tell people is just remember that everyone is different. So no matter what you look like, there'll be no one else who looks the same as you. And we've all got different body types and different things that are special about us. And I think also the day and age where we're living in, people are starting to really appreciate uniqueness. So I see all those models on pages now who have the skin conditions where they've like dark and white patches and stuff. And companies are really starting to like people who are different. So I think just embracing anything that makes you who you are, and remember that everyone's always different, so there's no one else like you.
Absolutely. I think stopping comparing yourself to others is so important, because you're right, we're all different. And even if we ate and exercise exactly the same as someone else, we'd never look exactly like them because they're different people. And comparing ourselves to others and judging ourselves all the time, it really does only make us feel worse. And it's something that we can't change. You know, it's something that is how it is. We all look different, we all have different body types, body shapes, and when we let go of that comparison, it definitely makes, you know, just life a whole lot better.
Yeah, and I think always remembering that life is always a journey and you're always doing your best at the time, because I've been doing kind of like bulking up for my next bodybuilding show, and I was looking back at old photos and I actually lost heaps of weight when I was going through heaps of emotional stuff that I didn't realize, but I still thought I looked good back then. And just remember that you're always doing your best, and your body does change over time depending on how committed you are or the type of training that you're doing or different stresses that are happening in your life, and sometimes things are out of your control. So if you're looking back at those old photos, or even if you're not in a good place now, just know that you're doing your best with the energy and knowledge that you have at the time, kind of thing.
Absolutely, that's so important. And that our bodies will just change throughout our lives, even just through aging, or, you know, maybe having kids one day, all these different things that affect the way that we look, you know, that are even outside of our control. And some things we can control and some things we can't, but that change is really the only constant.
The next question is a big one, and I see heaps of people arguing about it online. So should we eliminate oil from our diet?
So the simple answer is no. You absolutely do not have to eliminate oil in any, you know, way, shape or form to be healthy. You know, definitely, of course, recommend choosing higher quality oils. So for example, like extra virgin olive oil, like avocado oil, hemp oil, those types of good quality oils, just because of their health benefits, 100% yes. But that whole, you know, it's a very big narrative in that vegan, whole foods, plant-based sort of community, is that oil is bad and it will clog arteries and that type of thing. There's just no evidence to support that. And yes, oil is very energy dense. That is a fact. So for some people, like, reducing oils can be a helpful way to maintain weight or lose weight, just because they're reducing their energy intake for something that's like quite dense for a small amount of food. Yeah, that makes sense. But it has nothing to do with health. It's more just they're reducing the amount that they're eating. And, you know, oil, it does, like, it helps with cooking, it helps with like texture and carrying flavors and things like that. So, you know, if you want to eliminate oil and you feel better doing so, there's no problem in that. But, you know, having this narrative that oil is harmful and that we have to eliminate it, or that it's toxic, or all these types of things which are really fear-mongering and just not true, I think is just doing so much more harm than good. And also knowing that, like, completely eliminating oil can be really, like, restrictive in ways. For example, like, what are you going to do when you eat out? And that's just not really an option. Like, are you going to be able to still socialize and enjoy the foods that you enjoy and not become too rigid with food? So these are always really important things to consider as well.
I definitely agree with the thing, kind of with the salad dressings, like if you add something to the food to make you like it, then it's still kind of worth it. Because I tried this oil from New Zealand called Kokavo, and they had some plain flavors, and one was turmeric lemon, and there was like a coriander ginger flavor, a chili and lime, and then I'd make my stir fries in that, and then it would just make the food so crispy. I would just eat bowls and bowls of veggies because the flavors from that would infuse into it, and it was just so crunchy and delicious. So it actually just made me eat so many veggies. And then even if I do like a bowl with kale in it, I massage the kale with it as well. So I really like things like that, and definitely choosing the higher quality ones. But what would you say, because you know how the even the plant milks you buy, they add oil to them. So do you still say like it's still worth having it unless you try to make your own one at home, but then you've got to fortify the calcium and stuff? So what's your take on those?
Yeah, that's a really great point. So if you make it at home, like of course there's no problem with that, but you're not getting that calcium. So if you do make plant milks at home, it is important to fortify it yourself, or perhaps supplement or have other sources of calcium in your diet that you can rely on. But those oils in plant milks, like they are absolutely minuscule. Like if you're worrying about the oils in the plant milks, which are so minuscule, like that's kind of a bit of a red flag for me for potentially disordered eating or a bit of a disordered mindset around food, because like it is such a tiny amount. It really doesn't have an impact, and it's not something that we should be worrying about. And alternatively, there are also plant milks that don't have oil. Like if you want to choose that, that's also fine, but it's nothing to worry about.
I used to have a plant-based food truck when I lived in Rockhampton, which is the beef capital, and I actually made the decision to sell coffee with no cow's milk because I couldn't bring myself to buy it. So I just thought I'd just see how it goes. And I stood up at a market one time, and this really, really overweight lady came, and she came up to me and started like having a go at me, saying, "Do you know how bad those milks are for you? They're full of oil, blah blah blah." And I was kind of shocked, and then I can't even remember what I said, and then she kind of just walked away. But I think people online, I've been seeing all these TikTok videos, they're like, "You need to avoid seed oils, blah blah blah." So I just think, yeah, what do they think about the plant-based milks? Because I definitely love soy milk because it definitely helps with my protein intake, definitely helps with the calcium intake, and it's delicious. And I've put it in my coffee. I buy that vanilla soy milk as well, and I drank a whole carton of that after training the other night. Yeah, so do you think it's just nothing to worry about in those amounts kind of thing?
No, absolutely not. It really isn't. And I think like worrying about these tiny little things in food and not looking at the big picture can do so much more harm than good, especially, you know, with our relationship with food. And if food is causing you so much stress and anxiety, then even if you're doing it out of the means of health, is that really healthy?
Yeah, I think people, they often get caught up on all the opposing views online as well. So I think definitely looking at the bigger picture, tuning in with how you feel, and yeah, looking at the benefits of something rather than focusing on small negatives. What are some sneaky signs of disordered eating, and what can someone do if they notice that they have these behaviors?
Yeah, so there's so many different signs, but definitely that stress, anxiety, and guilt around food, a big preoccupation with food. So like thinking, worrying about food all the time. You know, maybe at the end of the day, you're going back through everything you've eaten that day and worrying about it and overthinking it, or planning in advance, like, you know, worrying about, I've got to eat out tonight or tomorrow night, and worrying about that, or worrying about what you're going to eat later. Those are big signs. Restricting, like cycles of like binge eating, overeating, and then restricting. Those are signs. Or just being rigid with food in general, like having rules around what, when, how much you can and can't eat, like time limits around when you can and can't eat food like that you don't allow yourself to eat and you would actually like to eat. You know, I'm not allowed this, or I'm not allowed more than one serve of this. Even like food having to be prepared in a very meticulous way, or not letting other people prepare food for you, having to like always know everything that's in your food. These are all like pretty good signs. And then if this is something that you are struggling with, or even if you're just feeling that stress, anxiety around food, I think the best place to start, first of all, is just recognizing that it is an issue and that it is something that you want to work on improving, and then talking to someone about it. So whether if you just start with reaching out to a friend or family member and saying, hey, look, I'm kind of struggling with this, or a health professional. So you could talk to your GP to start with, or a nutritionist, dietitian, especially one that specializes in disordered eating. I think that would be really fantastic. Or a psychologist can also be really, really helpful.
Do you think it's possible to fuel your training performance solely with intuitive eating, or does it depend on the person's experience level kind of thing? Because I'm meant to be doing the bodybuilding show in October, and I just don't like tracking, but I don't know if it's possible to do it intuitively, and then if I leave it too late, then I don't know if I'll get there in time. So do you find it better even for doing CrossFit and stuff?
I think it completely depends on your situation and your goals. Mm-hmm. So bodybuilding, like, it is a pretty niche thing because you're actually trying to change your body and kind of get unrealistically lean. So like, to achieve those goals, most people will have to follow some kind of, like, you know, dietary like rigidness, whether that's tracking food or like having a meal plan or something, and knowing that that's like for a specific reason and it's also only temporary. When it comes to CrossFit and other sports, sometimes it's possible for people to eat intuitively. I like to more say informed intuitive eating is the way to go. So by informed, I mean you're eating, yes, to what makes you feel good, what you feel like, to your hunger levels, but also sometimes like keeping in mind what you're doing training wise and making sure your food choices reflect that. So as an example, like your training load increases, but you don't really feel more hungry, that you still increase your food to match that. Or maybe you train at 6 o'clock in the morning, so you have to get up at 5 and you don't feel hungry then, but because you know you're going to go train, you still eat. So like, that's kind of that informed intuitive eating, where you're kind of using your knowledge on what you know is best for your body, as well as listening to your body itself.
Another thing I just remembered, I forgot to ask before, do you think fasted workouts are less effective because they don't have that easily usable energy there?
Yeah, so training fasted is definitely not the most optimal thing in terms of performance. Like for like weight and that kind of thing, like it really doesn't matter. Like, do what you want. But if your goal is to optimize performance, you're 100% going to do better having a bit of fuel on board. And that can just be like a banana, a piece of toast, a muesli bar, something to have some carbs in your system to help give your muscles, provide your muscles with that glucose to do what you're asking them to do. So fueling for the work required. Plus, as women or as females, it's also not great for our hormones training fasted. And a lot of people can result in irregular or even losing their period training fasted. So that's something else to keep in mind. If you have a history of amenorrhea or irregular periods and you train fasted, trying to not do that anymore is definitely going to be in your favor.
Cool. And the final thing I wanted to cover, which is another interesting one, red flags about nutrition for plant-based athletes. So there were some notes like, you can get enough protein all from fruit and veg, avoiding all processed foods, soy is bad for you, limiting fat intake, eat starchy foods last, and avoiding salt. Yeah. So that was just from your Instagram, but yeah.
Exactly. So, yeah. You know, in the vegan space, it's very big, you know, that whole foods only thing, which is great in theory. But if you're an athlete and your energy requirements are pretty high and your protein requirements are higher than just your everyday person, it's really hard to meet that just with whole food, just because those foods are filling and they're not very energy dense. So it is pretty much necessary or very helpful if you're quite an active plant-based eater or just quite an active person in general to include a little bit more of those processed foods, you know, including some bread, including some pasta, things like that, just to get your energy intake up where it needs to be to fuel your body appropriately. Soy, that's a big one. People are saying soy is harmful for your hormones or whatever. Like, there's just no evidence to back that up. We have so much evidence to show that soy is such a health promoting and safe food. It doesn't reduce testosterone in men. It doesn't increase estrogen. It doesn't cause hormonal issues. Like, that's complete pseudoscience and not true. We talked about the oil thing. Definitely don't need to avoid oils to be healthy. Don't need to avoid salt to be healthy either. Sure, excessive salt intake isn't great, especially if you have high blood pressure, but we actually need some salt in our diet. Sodium is an essential electrolyte and mineral, and especially if you're active and you sweat a little bit more than, you know, your average person, not replacing that through your diet or liquids like electrolytes, drinks, and that can actually lead to decreased performance and actual harm. So people who don't have enough salt in their diet to meet their requirements, maybe if they're heavy sweaters, for example, can get really dizzy and get really weak and really tired. So including some salt in your diet, if you don't have any issues with high blood pressure, that is absolutely nothing to worry about either.
I had a man say to me the other day, because he was saying he doesn't eat any seed oils or soy because it's bad for men. And I was like, no, it's got phytoestrogens, blah, blah, blah. But he still thinks it's okay for women, but bad for men. So what would you say to something like that? Just say that, is it still protective against cancers in men and everything as well?
Yeah. There's some really good evidence that soy is protective against prostate cancer, for example, also breast cancer, ovarian cancer, heart disease. And then, like, with the whole testosterone thing, like, there's just no evidence to support that. Like, we have plenty of studies to show that it doesn't affect testosterone levels in males or increase estrogen levels in males or anything like that. So, like, it just, your point is invalid, is what I would say.
I think it's all the stuff coming out online, because everyone's like going towards the carnivore thing. They're like, soy is bad, blah, blah, blah. And then everyone's starting to do the opposite now. So I get why it's confusing for people. But yeah, I definitely feel good eating soy. Yeah, cool. That was everything. We zoomed through it very, very fast. Was there anything else that you wanted to add? I'll put all your social media links in the description below. And was there anything else you wanted to finish off with?
No, I think we covered quite a good amount, and yeah, I think that's pretty much it. Hope people learned something and gained something from it today.
Yeah, I feel like that was so jam-packed. cool. So I'll put your social media links in the description. So if anyone wants to go follow Nina, you can keep up to date. I just like all the graphic things where you put the little pictures on and the writing, because it's just really easy to follow little tips and tricks and yeah, just love the crossover with plant-based stuff and CrossFit and everything, because it's like a really good approach to have. So yeah, I thought that was really helpful. So I hope you guys enjoyed, and stay tuned for next week.